Chapter 3. The Search for the Original Tree of Knowledge. He had left the confusing flickering of the group fire and walked a few steps away to make water. The sound of his own voice came low and in the throat. Knee, 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 knee. She who feeds us seemed unusually powerful this harvest moon night. Enchanted by the landscape transformed by intoxication and moonlight, he walked farther away from the noises of the domestic scene. The Hecule was near. He could feel it. At this thought, the hair on the back of his neck rose up. There was a sound like the shaking of seeds in a gourd. Then he saw the Hecule. It looked like an iridescent flower, mouth or sphincter hanging in space. And there were others behind it, spinning slowly in the darkness, some one way, some another. They approached him like a school of curious jellyfish. There was a soft, liquid explosion as the nearest one reached him and passed through his body. At that moment, the interior of his head flared with sunrise pink light, and he was infused with the presence of the thing. Impressions followed one another too swiftly to comprehend. Time fell away. Superfluids of frozen agate seemed to rush through enormous spillways. He had a sense of flinging himself happily into death, a kind of wild orgasmic paroxysm of self-affirmation. A previously inarticulate bubble of emotive intent came to his lips. Tears were running down his cheeks. He had said the words before, but he had never said and understood them in this way before. Tavodos! Tavodos! I am! Hallucinogens as the real missing link. The notion we are exploring in this book is that a particular family of active chemical compounds, the indole hallucinogens, played a decisive role in the emergence of our essential humanness, of the human characteristic of self-reflection. It is important, therefore, to know just what these compounds are and the roles that they perform in nature. The defining characteristic of these hallucinogens is structural. All have a five-sided pyrrole group in association with the better-known benzene ring. These molecular rings make the indoles highly reactive chemically and hence ideal molecules for metabolic activity in the high-energy world of organic life. Hallucinogens may be psychoactive and/or physiologically active and may target many systems within the body. Some indoles are endogenous to the human body, serotonin being a good example. Many more are exogenous, found in nature and the plants we can eat. Some behave like hormones and regulate growth or rate of sexual maturation. Others influence mood and state of alertness. The indole families of compounds that are strong visionary hallucinogens and also occur in plants are four in number. 1. The LSD-type compounds. Found in several related genera of morning glories and ergot, the LSD hallucinogens are rare in nature. That they are the best known of the hallucinogens is undoubtedly due to the fact that millions of doses of LSD were manufactured and sold during the 1960s. LSD is a psychedelic, but rather large doses are necessary to elicit the hallucinogenic paradis artificiel of vivid and utterly transmundane hallucinations that is produced by DMT and psilocybin at quite traditional doses. Nevertheless, many researchers have stressed the importance of the non-hallucinogenic effects of LSD and other psychedelics. These other effects include a sense of mind expansion and increased speed of thought, the ability to understand and to relate to complex issues of behavior, life patterning, and complex decision-making networks of connective linkage. LSD continues to be manufactured and sold in larger amounts than any other hallucinogen. It has been shown to aid in psychotherapy and the treatment of chronic alcoholism. Wherever it has been tried all over the world, it has proved to be an interesting treatment for a very old disease. No other drug so far has been able to match its record in salvaging tormented lives from the alcoholic scrap heap directly as a treatment or indirectly as a means of yielding valuable information. Yet as a consequence of media hysteria, its potential may never be known. 2. The tryptamine hallucinogens, especially DMT, psilocin, and psilocybin. Tryptamine hallucinogens are found throughout the higher plant families, for example, in legumes, and psilocin and psilocybin occur in mushrooms. DMT also occurs endogenously in the human brain. For this reason, perhaps DMT should not be thought of as a drug at all, but DMT intoxication is the most profound and visually spectacular of the visionary hallucinogens, remarkable for its brevity, intensity, and non-toxicity. 3. the beta-carbolines. Beta-carbolines such as harmine and harmaline can be hallucinogenic at close to toxic levels. They are important for visionary shamanism because they can inhibit enzyme systems in the body that would otherwise depotentiate hallucinogens of the DMT type. Hence, beta-carbolines can be used in conjunction with DMT to prolong and intensify visual hallucinations. This combination is the basis of the hallucinogenic brew ayahuasca, or yagé, in use in Amazonian South America. Beta-carbolines are legal and, until very recently, were virtually unknown to the general public. 4. The ibogaine family of substances. These substances occur in two related African and South American tree genera, Tabernanthe and Taberna montana. Tabernanthe iboga is a small yellow-flowered bush which has a history of usage as a hallucinogen in tropical West Africa. Its active compounds bear a structural relationship to beta-carbolines. Ibogaine is known more as a powerful aphrodisiac than as a hallucinogen. Nevertheless, in sufficient doses, it is capable of inducing a powerful visionary and emotional experience. These few paragraphs may contain the most important and exciting information that human beings have gathered concerning the natural world since the long-forgotten birth of science. More precious than the news of the antineutrino, more full of hope for humanity than the detection of new quasars, is the knowledge that certain plants, certain compounds, unlock forgotten doorways onto worlds of immediate experience that confound our science and, indeed, confound us. Properly understood and applied, this information can become a compass leading us back to the lost garden world of our origins. Seeking the Tree of Knowledge. In attempting to understand which indole hallucinogens and which plants might have been causally implicated in the emergence of consciousness, several important points need to be kept in mind. The plant we are seeking must be African, since the evidence is overwhelming that the human type emerged in Africa. More specifically, the African plant should be native to grassland, as this is where our newly omnivorous ancestors learned to adapt, coordinate their bipedalism, and refine existing methods of signaling. The plant must require no preparation. It must be active in its natural state. To suppose otherwise is to strain credulity. Mixtures, compounded drugs, extracts, and concentrations all belong to later stages of culture, when human consciousness and the use of language are well established. The plant must be continuously available to a nomadic population, easily noticed and plentiful. The plant must confer immediate and tangible benefits upon individuals who are eating it. Only in that way would the plant establish and maintain itself as part of the hominid diet. These requirements dramatically reduce the number of contenders. Africa has a scarcity of hallucinogenic plants. This scarcity and the contrasting overabundance of such plants in the tropical New World have never been satisfactorily explained. Can it be mere coincidence that the longer an environment has been exposed to human beings, the fewer its native hallucinogens and the fewer the species of plants generally occurring within it? Today, Africa supports almost no native plants that are really good candidates for catalysis of consciousness among the evolving hominids. Grasslands have far fewer plant species than forests. Because of this scarcity, it is highly likely that a hominid would test any grassland plant encountered for its food potential. The eminent geographer Carl Sauer felt that there was no such thing as a natural grassland. He suggested that all grasslands were human artifacts, resulting from the cumulative impact of seasonal burning. He based this argument on the fact that all grassland species can be found in the understory of the forests, at the edges of the grasslands, whereas a very high percentage of the forest species are absent from the grasslands. Sauer concluded that the grasslands are so recent that they must be seen as concomitant with the rise of fire-using human populations. Weeding out the candidates. Today, only the Bwidi religion among the Fang of Gabon and Zaire can be called a truly African hallucinogenic plant cult. Conceivably, the plant that is used, Tabernanthe iboga, could have had some influence on prehistoric people. However, there is absolutely no evidence of its use before the early 19th century. At no point, for example, was it mentioned by the Portuguese, who had a long history of trade and exploration in West Africa. This lack of evidence is difficult to explain if one believes that use of the plant is very old. Analyzed sociologically, Bwidi is a force not only for group cohesion, but also for holding marriages together. Historically, divorce is a chronic source of group anxiety among the Fang. This is due to the fact that divorce is easily obtained, but once granted, must be followed by complicated, protracted, and potentially expensive negotiations with the family of the divorced partner concerning the return of a portion of the dowry. Perhaps iboga, as well as being a hallucinogen, activates a pheromone promoting pair bonding. Its reputation for being an aphrodisiac could well be partially related to its promotion of pair bonding. The plant itself is a medium-sized bush, not a native of the grasslands but of the tropical forest. It is rarely found growing outside of cultivation. As a result of European contacts with tropical Africa, iboga became the first indole to come into vogue in Europe. Tonics based on the whole plant extract became extremely popular in France and Belgium after iboga was promoted to the public at the Paris Expedition of 1867. This crude extract was sold in Europe as lamborine, a cure for everything from neurasthenia to syphilis, and above all, an aphrodisiac. Not until 1901 was the alkaloid isolated. The initial wave of research that followed seemed promising. A cure for male impotence was eagerly anticipated. Yet ibogaine, once chemically characterized, was quickly forgotten. Though no evidence was ever offered that it was dangerous or addictive, the compound was placed in Schedule 1, the most restrictive and controlled category in the United States, making further research highly unlikely. Ibogaine remains to this day nearly unstudied in human beings. What we know of the iboga cult we learn from the observations of field anthropologists. The root scrapings of the plant are taken in quite prodigious amounts. Among the Fang, it is believed that they acquired this folkway during a centuries-long migration in which they were for some time in the proximity of pygmy people, who taught them the spiritual power resident in Bwiti. The root bark of the Tabernanthe iboga plant contains the psychoactive portion of the plant. According to the Fang, many grams of this root material must be eaten in order to open one's head. Lesser amounts are then effective for the remainder of a person's life. While the iboga cult is very interesting, I do not think iboga was the catalyst of consciousness in evolving humans. As already mentioned, it has not been shown to have a long history of use and is not a grassland plant. In addition, at small doses it diminishes ordinary vision by facilitating afterimages, halos, and visual streaking. No plants containing LSD-type compounds are known to have been used in Africa, nor are there any striking examples of plants that are rich in these compounds. Peganum harmala, the giant Syrian rue, is rich in the beta-carboline harmine and today occurs wild across the arid portions of Mediterranean North Africa. There is, however, no record of its use in Africa as a hallucinogen, and in any case it must be concentrated and/or combined with DMT to activate its visionary potential. The plant. We are left then by a process of elimination, with the tryptamine-type hallucinogens, psilocybin, psilocin, and DMT. In a grassland environment, these compounds might be expected to occur in either a dung-loving, coprophilic mushroom containing psilocybin, or in a grass containing DMT. But unless the DMT were extracted and concentrated, something beyond the technical reach of early human beings, these grasses could never supply sufficient amounts of DMT to provide an effective hallucinogen. By a process of elimination, we are led to suspect a mushroom might have been involved. When our remote ancestors moved out of the trees and onto the grasslands, they increasingly encountered hooved beasts who ate vegetation. These beasts became a major source of potential sustenance. Our ancestors also encountered the manure of these same wild cattle and the mushrooms that grow in it. Several of these grassland mushrooms contain psilocybin, Paniola species, and the Stropharia cubensis, also called Psilocybe cubensis. This latter is the familiar magic mushroom, now grown by enthusiasts worldwide. Of these mushroom species, only Stropharia cubensis contains psilocybin in concentrated amounts and is free of nausea-producing compounds. It alone is pandemic. It occurs throughout the tropical regions, at least wherever the cattle of the Zebu, Bos indices, type graze. This raises a number of questions. Does Stropharia cubensis occur exclusively in the manure of Zebu, or can it occur in the manure of other cattle? How recently has it reached its various habitats? The first specimen of Psilocybe cubensis was collected by the American botanist Earle in Cuba in 1906. But current botanical thinking places the species' point of origin in Southeast Asia. At an archaeological dig in Thailand at a place called Nong Nok Ta, which has been dated to 15,000 BP, the bones of zebu cattle have been found coincident with human graves. Stropharia cubensis is common in the Non-Noctah area today. The Non-Noctah site suggests mushroom use was a human trait that emerged wherever human populations and cattle evolved together. Ample evidence supports the notion that Stropharia cubensis is the plant, our umbilicus to the feminine mind of the planet, which, when its cult, the Paleolithic cult of the great horned goddess, was intact, conveyed to us such knowledge that we were able to live in a dynamic equilibrium with nature, with each other, and within ourselves. Hallucinogenic mushroom use evolved as a kind of natural habit with behavioral and evolutionary consequences. This relationship between human beings and mushrooms had to have also included cattle, the creators of the only source of the mushrooms. The relationship is probably altogether no more than a million years old, for the era of the nomadic human hunter dates from that time. The last 100,000 years is probably a more than generous amount of time to allow for the evolution of pastoralism from its first faint glimmerings. Since the entire relationship extends no further than a million years, we are not discussing a biological symbiosis that might take many millions of years to evolve. Rather, we are talking about a deep-rooted custom, an extremely powerful natural habit. Whatever we call the human interaction with a mushroom Stropharia cubensis, it has not been a static relationship, but rather a dynamic through which we have been bootstrapped to higher and higher cultural levels and levels of individual self-awareness. I believe that the use of hallucinogenic mushrooms on the grasslands of Africa gave us the model for all religions to follow. And when, after long centuries of slow forgetting, migration, and climatic change, the knowledge of the mystery was finally lost, we in our anguish traded partnership for dominance, traded harmony with nature for rape of nature, traded poetry for the sophistry of science. In short, we traded our birthright as partners in the drama of the living mind of the planet for the broken pot shards of history, warfare, neurosis, and if we do not quickly awaken to our predicament, planetary catastrophe. What are plant hallucinogens? In the light of their suggested importance for human evolution, it is natural to inquire what mutagens and other secondary byproducts are actually doing for the plants in which they occur. This is a botanic mystery that remains controversial among evolutionary biologists even today. It has been suggested that toxic and bioactive compounds are produced in plants in order to make them unpalatable and hence undesirable as food. It has also been suggested, conversely, that such compounds were developed to attract insects or birds that pollinate or distribute seeds. A more likely explanation for the presence of secondary compounds is based on the recognition that they are not, in fact, secondary or peripheral. Evidence for this is that alkaloids, usually regarded as secondary, are formed in the greatest amounts in tissues that are most active in overall metabolism. Alkaloids, including all the hallucinogens discussed here, are not inert end products in the plants in which they occur, but are in a dynamic state, fluctuating in both concentration and in their rate of metabolic decay. The role of these alkaloids in the chemistry of metabolism makes it clear that they are essential to the life and the survival strategy of the organism, but they are acting in ways that we do not yet understand. One possibility is that some of these compounds may be exopheromones. Exopheromones are chemical messengers that do not act among the members of a single species, but instead act across species lines, so that an individual influences members of a different species. Some exopheromones act in ways that allow a small group of individuals to affect a community or an entire biome. The notion of nature as an organismic and planetary whole that mediates and controls its own development through the release of chemical messages may seem somewhat radical. Our heritage from the 19th century is a nature all tooth and claw, where a pitiless and mindless natural order promotes survival of those capable of ensuring their own continued existence at the expense of competitors. Competitors in this theory mean all the rest of nature. Yet most evolutionary biologists have long held this classic Darwinian view of nature to be incomplete. It is now generally understood that nature, far from being endless warfare among the species, is an endless dance of diplomacy. And diplomacy is largely a matter of language. Nature appears to maximize mutual cooperation and mutual coordination of goals, to be indispensable to the organisms in which one shares an environment, that is, the strategy that ensures successful breeding and continued survival. It is a strategy in which communication and sensitivity to signal processing are paramount. These are language skills. The idea that nature might be an organism whose interconnected components act upon and communicate with one another through the release of chemical signals into the environment is only now beginning to be carefully studied. Nature, however, tends to act with a certain economy. Once developed, a given evolutionary response to a problem will be applied again and again in situations where it is appropriate. The Transcendent Other. If hallucinogens function as interspecies chemical messengers, then the dynamic of the close relationship between primate and hallucinogenic plant is one of information transfer from one species to the other. Where plant hallucinogens do not occur, such transfers of information take place with great slowness. But in the presence of hallucinogens, a culture is quickly introduced to ever more novel information, sensory input, and behavior, and thus is bootstrapped to higher and higher states of self-reflection. I call this the encounter with a transcendent other, but this is only a label, not an explanation. From one point of view, the transcendent other is nature correctly perceived to be alive and intelligent. From another, it is the awesomely unfamiliar union of all the senses with memory of the past and anticipation of the future. The transcendent other is what one encounters on powerful hallucinogens. It is the crucible of the mystery of our being, both as a species and as individuals. The transcendent other is nature without her cheerfully reassuring mask of ordinary space, time, and causality. Of course, imagining these higher states of self-reflection is not easy, for when we seek to do this, we are acting as if we expect language to somehow encompass that which is at present beyond language or translinguistic. Psilocybin, the hallucinogen unique to mushrooms, is an effective tool in this situation. Psilocybin's main synergistic effect seems ultimately to be in the domain of language. It excites vocalization. It empowers articulation. It transmutes language into something that is visibly beheld. It could have had an impact on the sudden emergence of consciousness and language use in early humans. We literally may have eaten our way to higher consciousness. In this context, it is important to note that the most powerful mutagens in the natural environment occur in molds and fungi. Mushrooms and cereal grains infected by molds may have had a major influence on animal species, including primates, evolving in the grasslands.